Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline D'Est, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Through the roof. Today I am speaking with Toby Neal. Toby is an award-winning best-selling writer of mysteries, romance, apocalyptic romantic thrillers, and memoir, many of which are set in Hawaii. She has a background in social work and mental health therapy, and her latest book, Wired Truth, Paradise Crime Thriller Book Number 10, is out now. Thanks for speaking with me today, Toby.
Welcome to the Aloha State. thank you so much for reaching out to me. I'm delighted to be on your show.
Fabulous. So how I like to start off is with a few kind of warm-up questions. So, you know, a little appetizer before we get into the main meal. So do you write every day, Toby?
I sure do try to. I believe writing is like a muscle and it needs a frequent workout and to build the habit of using it. And so I try to, for sure.
Do you have any little targets or?
I go for 2,000 words a day. If it's good enough for Stephen King, it's good enough for me.
That's so even, it sounds like you would do only a few drafts in.
Well, I generally have been publishing about 4 or 5 books a year as an indie. And so so in order to keep up that pace, I really do have to be at the working at it on a very regular basis.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So are you a plotter or a pantser?
I would say a little bit of both. I love to just to pants on occasion because, and that's kind of how I do my romances. And that feels like vacation to me because it's just playing and writing whatever I feel like or wherever the characters are taking me. But with mystery, you really have to plot. And that's my main genre, main bread and butter. And I've done only one pantsed mystery and I ended up having to cut 50,000 words and rewrite it so many times. So I learned my lesson early. That was a not productive way to go.
And when you do get to write, do you have any writing rituals?
I sure do. My mental health background comes in handy here. So I've made myself an affirmations recording. And this is a part, I also do some author coaching on the side. And this has been one of the main tools that I've been able to use with clients and with myself. And I'll make like a list of affirmations and then I record them in my special hypnosis voice. And then I listen to that in the morning while I'm taking a walk with my dog. And it really puts me into a productive frame of mind where I'm ready to come to the page and just get right to work after that.
Wow, that's really interesting. Are they private, your affirmations, or are you able to share an example?
Oh, yeah. An example would be something like, I easily and joyfully come to the page. I never experience any block in the flow of words as they flow through me through to the page. I enjoy and feel anticipation every time I sit down at my keyboard. You see how easily they roll off my tongue?
Yeah.
I've been listening to them a few times. So I really find this to be an incredible tool, again, for my clients and for myself. And I use it in various ways. Right now, I'm also focusing on any blocks I might have to, you know, being even more successful as far as book sales and things like that. So I've had a few hang-ups, as many writers do, with learning some of the technical aspects of what it is to be a successful six-figure indie. For instance, mastering different kinds of ads. and so I've thrown in some affirmations around, you know, things like I easily and you know, joyfully can learn any technology that I need to for my business. And again, those things help me get past that resistance that you can feel within yourself, either to coming to the page or to learning something new. So those are some of the hacks that I have as a mental health professional that I can bring to the table.
That's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I thought you might not have heard that every day of the week.
No, that was not what I was expecting. But it's all cool. All right, so let's get in a little bit more in depth into your writing itself. So you write lots of different things, but how do you describe your writing? And are there particular themes that you explore even throughout the different genres?
That's a great question. And I think that anybody who stays in this field for, you know, beyond a book or two, discovers that they are drawn over and over to the same kinds of themes, what no matter what genre they're writing in. And my themes seem to be good versus evil, the shades of gray in everyone, and how love can overcome a multitude of problems and bring healing. And that sounds it sounds sort of cheesy. How do you write that into a murder mystery? But over and over again, that's what clients, I'm sorry, readers say that they pick up from my books, that they, even though there's dark material at times in these, you know, because they're police thrillers, and so they're crime novels, and we usually start with a body and some sort of macabre, you know, thing, and then, you know, how my characters are working out their personal issues as they are solving the crime is what keeps readers coming back to my work, I think, most.
That's interesting. And it's just occurred to me now, which, you know, because I've been trying to, because I really like mystery genre as well. It's like, why is it so attractive and so popular? And what you were talking about there made me think, actually, maybe because there's some hope in there.
Yeah. I think I've actually given a lot of thought, and it bothers me that we are so preoccupied with crime and dark things, either in television or movies or on the page. And if you ever meet me in person, I'm a very bubbly up, cheerful, friendly person. And so people are like, why do you write these dark books? Or, you know, why do you write about, you know, murder and evil and things like that? And it's really, I'm writing about how good overcomes those things. But what keeps me fascinated with it, and what I've discovered in my own research, is that I think people are preoccupied with crime because we're looking to be able to recognize the wolves in our midst. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're preoccupied with serial killers, with, you know, shows about crime, etc. I think that the human mind is trying to always be a little bit ahead in the safety area of being able to recognize the signs of someone who's going to turn on them. And so we that's why we put a lot, even in today's society, we're really interested in those things. So that's my hopeful slant on why people love crime shows and movies and things like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting, especially considering the other part that I've always wondered about is how women, middle-aged women, love their crime and their true crime as well. And that really goes with what you're saying.
I do. I think that there's a evolutionary bias towards recognizing aberrant patterns of behavior. So that's me getting my little psychologist hat on for a minute and saying that, you know, we are trying to stay safe and we're trying to feel safe in our lives and try to give us these tools. We're drawn to what we think might be a tool to help us recognize the signs of something going sideways, as we say in the United States. And so that's why I think about it. That's not why particularly I write about those things. I write about those things because I'm fascinated between the duality of dark things and light things, and how, and when I write crime set in Hawaii, which is an inherently already contrasting topic, one of the themes that comes up again and again in my work is how there are terrible, ugly things happening under a beautiful sky. And what, you know, what does that, I just am drawn to that. to that conflict.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the big question I like to ask, getting back to the writing process. So what do you think is the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
Gosh, I wish I had some kind of glamorous, tricky answer for you. But honestly, it's putting in the time. It's truly mastering your craft with many, many hours of work. Malcolm Gladwell has a really good book out called Outliers. Have you ever heard of it? It's a social science book. And he talks about exceptional people in that book. And what's interesting is that his answer is not actually, it's counterintuitive, that talent is never enough. Just time practicing is what makes the difference. And so your 10,000 hours is the amount of time that he thinks for complete mastery in your craft, whether it's music or a sport or, you know, writing is another thing. So I've definitely put in my 10,000 hours since I've written more than 30 books now. Mm. And then my slightly less fancy answer that is an actual tool you can take home, besides the fact that reading about writing, talking about writing, getting together with your friends and noodling around with writing is actually nothing but writing is going to make you a better writer. And the other thing is a certain little book that I came across a few years ago that's called Take Off Your Pants by Libby Hawker. Fantastic book. Fantastic. And she talks about a simple method of outlining that follows the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. And what was so interesting is that my first, I had already written close to 10 books when I found Libby's book, but I was instinctively doing my books just like she, you know, describes. Mm-hmm. And I just wish I would have had such a faster learning curve if I had had it. So I highly recommend that book. And Libby is a fantastic writer herself. She writes in historical fiction, literary, and romance. And you can, and she's just recently had a number one top chart seller. So she uses her method in her own work. So I really love writers who are super successful and top of their field, who are also sharing information that's super helpful. Mm-hmm. So I can't recommend that little book enough. Mine is dog-eared, because when in doubt, I go back to it and I'm like, oh yeah, it bases the thing on every hero in every story has a flaw, and the flaw needs to be resolved no matter what genre it is, you know, thriller, mystery, romance, literary. It's all about the hero finding a cure or a healing for their flaw of their character. And how is that going to happen in the context of whatever story you're constructing around that?
Great. Going back to the 10,000 hours rule. So mm-hmm. Have you always written, or did you hit a point in your life where you decided to start taking this seriously and getting your 2,000 words down a day? So, you know, has your 10,000 hours just happened recently, do you think?
That's a very great question. I started out always wanting to be a writer. I think I wanted to I was writing my first stories when I was 5 years old, dictating them to my mom and having her write them down and I would illustrate them. And I had a very unconventional growing up, which I wrote about in my memoir, Freckled. We were mainly homeless a lot in Hawaii, and I wasn't hardly in school. And I was just self-taught with books in the library and very creative parents who allowed a lot of freedom, you know, that had its own, you know, downsides. But I always wanted to. And then, but what I was also reacting to my parents' lifestyle by wanting to have a more secure and, you know, predictable, normal, quote, life. Mm-hmm. And so I was getting myself to college, and then I was doing 3 degrees and, you know, I went into mental health in part to understand what I went through as a child, and also in part because I knew I could make a good living. And at the time, you know, that I was growing up, the writer's journey seemed very uncertain, and I wanted a paycheck and a decent home and a car and all the things that I didn't grow up with. So I got all those things. And by the time I was 40 and my children were entering high school, I was like, you know, if I'm going to do this thing, I need to start doing it. And I had by then put my writing and my desires so far on the side that I began writing anonymously on an online blog. And that's how I built up my writing muscle. I began entering these little contests under a pen name. And when I was winning them, and then I started the story that became my first book, Blood Orchids, online at my anonymous blog. And as readers were like commenting, like, oh, what happens next? What happens next? And it's about this police officer who's trying to solve the crime of these two murdered girls, which was actually based on my experience as a school counselor at that time. We found we had this tragedy on my island, these two drowned girls. We thought it was a homicide. I was part of this team responding to the trauma and counseling the students. And it was so upsetting and so devastating. I began to write on it, you know, as if I was a police officer to solve the case, because I was so frustrated that my role, all I could do was pass a box of tissues and go there, you know, when it was really unspeakable and terrible. And I wanted answers. So there, I came to it with a lot of passion, and the passion carried me past my own inhibitions. So I had tried to write before many times, like, and then I would bog down. I was trying to do sort of literary fiction and I bored myself by page like 40. I was like, nothing's happening. Okay. And I'd throw it aside, you know, but this, I was like, I was doing something on the page. I was solving the case that I really cared about it. And I had created enough steam to actually finish what became my first book and has now sold over 200,000 copies.
Wow. Fantastic. What an exciting story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it did. I was 40 when I began. And then once I got that first book took me 3 years. By the time I had gone through all the editing and got my agent and shopped it and all this, and I kept writing in the series, the next book took a year and a half. The next book took 6 months. And then I began writing 3 or 4 books a year. And that's what I've kept up ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you've got your process down pat, but are you trying any new techniques at the moment?
I have. I'm really enjoying using dictation as a part of my arsenal. So I started, of course, typing traditionally. And once you become a full-time writer, there's a lot of sitting with your butt in the chair and carpal tunnel and back problems and all of this. And I really needed to manage I developed carpal tunnel early on, and then I was just managing that. So now I only really sit at the desk I do outlines by hand because I access my creativity better by hand than in front of a computer. And then I only sit at the computer to do editing. And so I'll dictate a scene. I'll write out, this works really well for me, and you could try it. It might get you past some of you or your readers past or listeners, past some of the, just little mental blocks that, you know, when you sit down in front of your computer, it can feel like a school assignment or something like that, that it kind of kills our joy. Mm-hmm. So by writing out my scene longhand, like just in a paragraph of what it's going to be, and then I walk on my treadmill and dictate, and I just use my iPhone. I don't use Dragon or anything like that. I just do talk to text into a document. And then I import my words, cut and paste them into a Word document. And then my next phase is the editing. And I do sit down at my computer and I edit those words because the computer, you know, the phone makes a lot of errors. And there's some of them are hilarious, you know, names, yeah. Hawaiian names are just ridiculous what that comes up with because it can't pronounce that at all.
You should try a foreign accent. Wait.
I can only imagine. So I sit down and I massage through the scene I just dictated and, you know, insert it into basically my outline. And that's a day's work. It maybe takes me till noon. And then I work on like advertising and marketing and reader involvement and things like that in the afternoon. So that keeps me moving much more and on top of all the physical challenges of being a full-time writer.
Cool. Okay. So what writers inspire you when you get to sit down and read?
Oh, I am treating myself to actual paper books after some years of only reading on my Kindle because it was just so instant gratification. I've begun once again, probably 5 years into my Kindle, buying hardback books and paperback books. And I read in my genre because I find that I have a little side platform reviewing other people's books that's kind of occurred, you know, on BookBub and Goodreads. And it's a way that I can also share with my readers books that I've enjoyed. Most recently, I really loved Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. Fantastic literary historical fiction suspense mashup. And that book I'm going to read again in because it gave me an idea for a new book that I want to write about, you know, a child. It's about an abandoned child in a marsh who basically raises herself, and then there's a murder, and you see these these timelines sort of moving towards this inevitable, you know, showdown. And what's great is it's all the beautiful prose of a literary historical, but this suspense element of, like, from the beginning there's a body and you know something bad is going to happen and has to be resolved, and it just relentlessly draws you forward. And I was like, I want to write something with that level of mastery. And that's a super popular book that's out right now. So I wrote up a nice review of it. And of course, my go-to personal vacation book is Diana Gabaldon in the Outlander series. I was a fan of that long before I started writing, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And I still enjoy very much her lush and relatable world.
Fantastic. So Tell us a little bit more about Wired Truth. So what inspired it? And going back to the whole writing process thing, were you trying anything different with this one?
I was. So this book is part of a series called The Paradise Crime Thrillers, and it stars a multicultural, basically kick-ass heroine she's sort of a combination between Lisbeth Salander, the, you know, hacker from Dragon Tattoo, and she also is an MMA fighter and an FBI agent, and she has this secret program that she uses to hack into all the law enforcement databases so she can, I've made this whole, like, world with it, where she basically has this. She has a character arc that begins with her as an FBI agent and a domestic abuse survivor who's escaped her evil gangster husband who lives in Hong Kong. And she's got all these skills that are built up around defeating him. By book five, she begins to, you know, overcome that past. And by book 10, she's truly coming into her own as a woman and a CEO of $1 billion basically security company that's international, and it's based out of Honolulu. And one of the things I'm doing with this book is this series is really pushing the envelope of what's acceptable for female behavior. So she has multiple lovers, and I know, like, every time I pull off a book and everybody is still in love with her, including the women, I feel like I've struck a blow for women's rights, that it isn't just men who can, you know, be amazing and vulnerable and someone who is trying to find their way in a romantic relationship through experimentation. You know, she also has a child out of wedlock. And then, you know, one whole book is who's the father, you know, and again, still people are loving her. And I keep waiting for the axe to fall and somebody to, like, get all morally outraged. But this is the world we live in where people are trying to figure out their lives in the context of different kinds of love. And so even though it's thrillers and, you know, and crime and mystery, I'm really a romantic. And I always want my character to find their perfect love interest. And Sophie, my main character in this one, is having a rough time. She just, you know, one thing after another with these guys, and And by this book, she's single and she's trying to be like, okay, this is my life. I'm a single mom. How do I run this company and solve a diamond heist and bring home the bacon and put the relieve the nanny. At the same time, I love to bring in these delectable flirtations for her and keep it lively. So I have a blast writing these books. It's a lot of wish fulfillment and stuff like that, because I'm a very staid and respectable person who got married young, and I've, been married to the same guy for 30 something years and raised my children already. And, it's all great and everything, but it's really also fun to be this, this hot black woman who does computer hacking and MMA fighting.
With a harem of lovers.
Exactly.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I might start to wrap up now, let you get back to all that writing, all those 15 books you write a year. So what are you working on right now?
I'm actually adding a 13th book to my original 12-book series, which is the Paradise Crime Mysteries. So I just was telling you about the Paradise Crime Thrillers with Sophie. My first series is police procedurals with a multicultural heroine named Leilani Teixeira. She's part Hawaiian, Portuguese, and Japanese, which is a not uncommon mix found in Hawaii. And she has a very different trajectory in love and life than Sophie. Sophie's her friend. So they're like a related world. And Lei is she's a sergeant police homicide detective. So it's a little bit more predictable, and she has one love interest, and they go through, on and off and up and down and try, on the rocks and then reconciled and stuff in that series. And I had wrapped it up with book 12, and then I started writing the Sophie books and did 10 of those. And then I just started missing Lei and her family. And I went back and I'm adding a 13th one. This is a fabulous story about basically pirates and human trafficking off the coast of Hawaii. And I'm having a blast with it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sparing the time to chat with me today. So if people want to find out more about you and all your books, where's the best place to find you online?
Yeah, look for me at tobyneal.net, or you can just type me in on Amazon, TOBYNEAL, and I come pop up with a bajillion things for you to take a look at.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Toby.
All right. Thank you, Madeline, for reaching out. It was really fun. Aloha.
For listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Right Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?